Hi, I'm Lashana Lynch, and you are listening to the Post-Credit Scene podcast.
Any possibilities, man. So.
Fair.
Yeah, man. I'm open to the world, do you know what I mean? Yeah. What about yourself, sir?
Same answer as you.
Nice.
A sheepish laugh.
Or open to the possibilities.
The possibilities.
That's crazy.
Imagine the video's already going to get blocked on YouTube.
Do you know, we've been getting quite a few, like...
It's normally Basola and Huss. It's one of them two.
100%, it's one of them two. It's always
just always say stupid shit.
Yeah.
Just different types of stupid shit.
Just different types of stupid shit.
Kids is going to have a lot of bleeping to the ready. Let me stop swearing. We are the Post-Credit Scene podcast, a 14HQ original. Lovers of film, TV, theatre and anime. We've added another...
Cheers! Gang.
But okay. Yeah, I'm way too accommodating. way too accommodating this podcast. But that's what we do, man. We're an accommodating podcast. We're always growing.
We're truly a podcast about the arts. We're growing.
For real. I think there's so many branches and some sort of... different interests, it's worth always tapping into, which we did recently.
Absolutely.
If you haven't checked it out, Manny hosted a fantastic episode.
Thank you.
Came out last week, talking about all things anime, manga, and the different realms within that specific world, and how they sort of also cross over into sort of the mainstream Western world of film and TV as well, which is really cool. Jason was alongside Manny, keeping the ship afloat, and we had two guests. We had Rams and we had NK. NK's a sort of just a staple now.
Yeah.
I think him and Ori are fighting it out.
Yeah.
I think NK is in the lead. I think he's got one ahead of...
He's got one ahead of Ori.
We should do like a leaderboard. I think MK is on four.
Yeah.
Ori's on three.
Yeah, she's done all three seasons, yeah.
Ola's on two.
Case has done one. And there's a few other friends of the shows. I like those episodes when the friends come on.
Yeah, I really do, sure, man.
I think they're the best ones.
You lot don't have friends.
Yeah.
You lot are your friends. You lot are friends.
Which friends is he on about?
You lot literally are friends.
Okay, are you two, which friend would you pick to you? And what topic would they speak on?
Well, definitely like gaming adaptations, like films and whatnot. But
I don't know, I'd take Karen to talk about like things like The Wire and what's the word we used the other day?
The prestige shows.
Prestige TV, because he's very much of the prestige.
Yeah, that guy's
he's a bit of a snob.
Oh, yeah. My friend, isn't it? So.
No, yeah. That's a Hussam don't like you too, clearly.
Yeah. Karin is a snob when it comes to...
And do you know one thing? I hope you listen to this. He plays it off like he's not. He's one of us. I know.
If you are a snob, you kind of have to own it.
You think I'm a snob?
I think you can be.
I feel like I can.
You've got like what's the word?
Snobbish tendency.
Yeah, tendency.
That's the word.
What's the ranking for snob like behavior on the pod?
I don't really think we are like.
I mean, Basola's just not a snob. She can't. Yeah, Basola's
not a snob.
She is the one calling people snobs.
Yeah, I think I might be the most snobbish.
You might be.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't like. And I know I definitely do it. It's not like.
Might be you,
me. Oh no,
Manny.
Yeah, I think it's me.
It might be me after.
Yeah.
Well, after I would probably like, I would even have Huss in third. Huss is snobbish, in the opposite sense. Where it's like,
you don't like Marvel.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't like car explosions.
He looks at us.
Godzilla.
He looks at us being like, oh,
big bat.
Like prestige TV. Look at
you. Look at you guys. Look, you're guys cool because you like The Wire and The Sopranos.
Yeah.
You don't like fight, horror. Did you say words? Sentences.
Oh, that's a funny start to the podcast.
I remember. I think this was in the first season where Huss was like, I don't watch Stranger Things because it's about just scary white kids. He goes, why do I want to watch that? I'm like, bro, that doesn't make any fucking sense. No.
Stranger Things is
opposite of snobness. That's funny.
I'd say your third.
Third?
As you know, I'm going to go Huss. I might even go Huss second on the other flip, though.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, like Huss, like the way he rides for like MCU and stuff like that, sometimes it makes me think like, are we in the wrong?
No, if that's the case, Huss is first. Ooh. Because I remember when I watched The Severance, I was like, I haven't even heard of that. What would you even put the number one? That's number one.
Yeah, yeah.
Huss is number one.
Yeah, Huss is the snobbiest. He's the snobbiest.
In the weirdest way possible. I can be snobby about trash TV.
Hey, listen.
Imagine me sort of comes in here mocking us for not watching flipping reality TV shows.
Yeah, if she ever dared to do that, she just can't come back on the podcast. No, but yeah, we are the Post-Credit Scene podcast, and that was a really good start to the pod. Good catch up with you guys. We hope you guys are all well, though. Everyone all right?
All good,
my guy,
good stuff, man.
How about you?
I'm all right, man. Busy bees, but you know.
Fresh trimming that.
Fresh trim for no reason. Just wanted to get a fresh trim. Actually, no, I was supposed to go somewhere Thursday, and I was so tired. So tired. Shout out to Asher though. He invited me somewhere. And I was just, you know, when you just got.
It's not as fun when you actually tell us where you're gonna go, because I was gonna make up a complete story. I was even gonna reply with, "I bet she was disappointed."
He got in there before. He got in there. Cut out all the rumors.
Just needed an evening to myself.
Yeah, sometimes you need that, man.
Yeah, man.
For sure.
But yeah, it's been a busy few weeks. We haven't actually done one of these sort of catch up episodes for quite some time.
Yeah.
So let's dive into it straight away, man. Who wants to hit the boat out? Who wants to start off the pod with what they've been watching?
I don't mind kicking it off. I went to watch Sinners like 17 times.
maybe we can skip that.
Yeah. No, we can. No, but on the back of Sinners, so one of my regents, she's been recommending me stuff like for ages and ages and ages.
Do you want to give her a shout out?
Huh? Do you want to shout out to Holly, Magical Holly. You guys know Holly, I think.
No.
No, these two.
Nah, I don't think so. Maybe.
You might do. You probably know about face. Yeah. Shout out to Holly, my guy. She constantly recommends me stuff, and I haven't watched anything she's ever recommended. One time she recommended something, forgot it was. I watched it, then I messaged her, I was like, "Oh, you should watch this show. I recommended you this." And then I tried to get her to watch Sinners. She's like, "I'm gonna be childish and petty, y'all. I've been recommending you stuff for years. You haven't watched a single thing, so I'm not watching Sinners." I was like, "Do you know what? You got it. You're fair. It's like, give me a list of things that
also
I need to watch."
Spying herself to be.
Yeah, exactly. Give me a list of things to watch, and I watched them right away. But she did this wavy thing where she gave me like TV shows, films, and she also gave me music. Saying like, if you want to watch something, she gave me one artist called Hozier. I don't know if you.
I've heard Hozier. Of him. Not my.
It's not a band.
I thought it was a band.
But so it's just one guy, like Tame Impala almost.
Say what?
It's like Tame Impala, right?
I don't know what.
You don't know? Wait, say that again.
Now, you would have heard of Tame Impala, like you would have.
The name sounds familiar, but
yeah,
don't think.
Crazy that you don't know who Tame Impala.
I don't find it's crazy.
We can circle back.
Yeah, okay, but the idea is that yeah, it seems like it's a band, but it's really just one guy doing it all.
So I thought it was a band. Somebody told me it was a band. I thought it was a guy. No, I thought it was a band. Someone told me it was a guy.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Anyways, but yeah, Hozier, it's called. But she recommended Interview with Vampire.
Okay.
Which I started watching. It's really enjoyable. I'm only two episodes in, and obviously kind of related to Sinners. And I've seen quite a few people mention an Interview with a Vampire on the back of Sinners. Mm. So an Interview with a Vampire in the first two episodes is set in the 1910s. And this black guy works in New Orleans. You know what
okay.
I'm talking about?
Yeah, now I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Works in New Orleans, but the show starts off with, in modern day, 2022, I believe it is, an older journalist is talking about him having meeting this vampire in the past. Then the vampire calls him out again, them to sit down, to have a conversation, and essentially the guy just telling him the story of his origins, and how he first became a vampire, and how he maneuvers through the world as a black vampire within the US system.
And
it's fairly interesting. The acting is really well done. It's like, it's shot really great. Like, it's really just an enjoyable watch as well. And so far, the few characters that I know, again, only two episodes in, I'm really enjoying it, and I'm excited to carry on watching it. It's just a shame that there's so many other things to watch as well. But yeah,
where can people watch it?
You can watch it on BBC iPlayer. It's on BBC iPlayer. I think it's the first season, 7 episodes, I believe. They're about an hour long each. Go give it a watch.
Amazing start to the podcast, mate.
Sure.
I'll go. Yep. Because I think it's probably best to get like the big hitter out of the way. Big hitter, depending on your perspective. I got to watch Mission Impossible, the Final Reckoning.
Yes.
Got to watch Mission Impossible, the Final Reckoning this week. Really excited for it. I really was super excited for it. It's Tom Cruise's sort of farewell to the franchise, apparently. But we know how Hollywood works. Get lured back in for another. But it was a final closing for a big franchise that's been here for like over 30 years. And I decided to start doing like a rewatch. And I've got to Ghost Protocol. Great film, then. But yeah, Final Reckoning. It's a mixed bag. Yeah, it's a mixed bag. The first half of the film is like super slow.
Okay.
Full of like exposition explaining Dead Reckoning, which I thought was great. I thought Dead Reckoning was really good, man. Yeah, just sort of like a lot of dating back to the previous film, which I found it slowed down and bogged down the film, bogged down the pacing, which meant the film was like 2 hours and 50 minutes. I just don't think it needed to be. Yeah. Like, if you've seen the films, you've seen the films, and if you've not, you've not. At this point, like, people will still show out anyway. I don't think you need all that exposition.
50 minutes, Jesus Christ.
It's super long, yeah. And also, there was a lot of, like, sort of callbacks to the previous films, which in one sense makes sense, but again, I think they were super unnecessary for the film because we had sort of different characters from the previous films coming back in, and I was like, you've introduced us to some new characters as well, and we didn't get to spend time with them because you've harkened back to, like,
the older ones.
The older characters, and, like, tying... There's a lot of, like, tying of threads which weren't necessarily originally there for me, which they attempted to do with this final film, which was unnecessary. So the first half is super slow for me. But the second half, towards when you get towards, like, the insane stunts that Tom Cruise does, the film picks up. There was a particular scene, which I'm sure we all kind of are aware of the airplane. Like, bro, I was watching that scene, and it was like, I was scared for Tom Cruise. Not even for Ethan Hunt. Because I knew Ethan would be fine. Ethan's always fine. He always survives. Yeah. I was scared for Tom Cruise. Because he literally puts his life, to some degree, on the line for these stunts. And I think it's an incredible...
He's an older guy as well. Like, he's like in his 60s.
Early 60s? Early
60s. Have you guys ever seen that like interview with Matt Damon where he talks about Tom Cruise talking about stunts? Where like he'll go to his... he said that like something along the lines of... he was talking to his stunt guy about what he wanted to do. And the stunt guy was like, oh, we can't do that because... it's too much and like insurance and whatnot. And then Tom Cruise goes, so I got a new stunt guy.
So the first half is super slow. Second half is quite good. All in all, I don't know if it's a must watch for people that aren't necessarily in love with the franchise.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you end up watching it anyway, I think you can still take some enjoyable aspects from it. But for the most part, I don't think it's a must watch. But if you have watched most, if not all of the films, see out the franchise, say goodbye to it, because it's there's a lot of sort of craftsmanship that's still gone into it, a lot of dedication from Tom Cruise. Some of the stunts are also like, it's like, this, bro, how, this ain't believable, bro. Like, this is like suspending belief beyond reasonable doubt sort of thing. So yeah, I have mixed...
Especially when you see him pull them off.
Yeah, right? Like, it's no, almost just like, bro, this is, you're taking a piss.
Yeah.
But... listen, man, he wants to create cinema. He wants to create moments for people that will last with them. And I do think, overall, the franchise itself is one of the greatest that we've ever seen, without a shadow of a doubt. The film also is a bit of like a egoic trip boost for Tom Cruise, I think.
Okay.
In the sense of like...
yeah, go on.
Ethan Hunt is portrayed to be this sort of like divine savior, the only guy that... what's Dune's guy? What's Timothy Chalamet's character? What's Lisa, oh, Lisa Nagib?
Yeah.
Yeah, that.
Tom and Cruise is the Lisa Nagib.
He's the Lisa, exactly. And my only other issue is that the villain is posed as, like, as this big threat. It's AI, basically.
AI is the threat.
Yeah. But this was also from Dead Reckoning. So that was the same villain in that film. That's the villain here. And it was just like...
you heard me, right?
What did you say?
What did you say? I didn't hear it.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I had to. He said, oh, AI was doing this like Allen Iverson.
Oh.
And I had to look at kids like, somebody must have had
someone
me.
Help me. Somebody help me.
Because it was funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's a good one. It's a good one.
Yeah, the answer, but yeah, go on.
Our bad, we missed that one.
Just like posed as this big threat, and I didn't feel the pertinent threat of that threat. I didn't feel, oh, the AI is this thing. It's more like, oh, you're telling me it's a threat. Rather than it being
an actual threat.
And I think villains can take a film from, or antagonist, or the mix of the two, where it's like, there's like a black and it's a grey area villain or character. I think they can take a film from, I don't know, 5, 6 out of 10. They can like really propel a film to upper echelon. So that was disappointing. But as I said, craftsmanship, dedication to the cause and to cinema. Second half of the film, really good. And I like the sort of, there's like a real like brotherly bond between Tom Cruise's character and Luthor. Do you remember Luthor?
The black guy?
Yeah, the black guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's his sort of like, that's been his guy since the first film.
Oh.
Yeah.
I've not seen all of the Mission Impossible. I've only, I'm going to say the first three.
Well, three's good. Three's good. I like three.
I've tapped out.
Three's good.
So when it got like
When it got good, you stopped watching it.
Stopped watching it, yeah.
Because Ghost Protocol...
that's when it
Ghost Protocol's good. Dead Reckoning's good. Rogue Nation?
Yeah, that's the one.
Good films. Rebecca Ferguson's one, right?
Mm. Yep.
Good films, man. So,
guys, I'm going to put on my hand and say...
I think at some point...
James Bond.
I would say both of you should...
Yeah. Fallout as well.
Fallout's good. It's not great. It's decent.
Fallout is the one
with... Henry Cavill.
Henry Cavill, yeah.
Just for that scene in the bathroom. That's
the only reason why...
That's the one with Rebecca Ferguson as well.
I saw
a tweet saying... how much of a homage this film is to the other films?
Yeah,
and then I think that's when a message is like, "Yeah, I'm not going."
Yeah, because to ask you to sit through that,
yeah,
not because it's not good, but because
I feel like you need to have that
connection.
Like, yeah, yeah, and it's like, bro,
it's like your appreciation to another.
Exactly. It's like, I know I'm not gonna love this film the way that, or even appreciate this film.
Someone else would.
In the way that I'm meant to. It's like, why am I going to watch it?
Yeah.
And somebody else could take my seat.
Yeah, Basile took it. To be fair, yeah, Basile was there. So yeah. Mixed bag. I'd give it like a 6 out of 10, I think.
Okay.
I think a mid to high 6. Overall, though, great franchise. So, shout out to Tom, man.
Fair,
Jason.
That's fair.
That's 3 stars, by the way, Jason.
That's not... it's noted.
Jason, I'm serving over to you.
Thank
you. Can you return serve?
So, I finished the second season of Star Wars Andor.
Which... This is like my TikTok's making me sick, man. Like my TikTok FYP is literally all the creators that I may or may not follow. Andor. And I want to, because I watched season one. It's fucking great. I do want to watch it. Just, you know, when you're juggling so much.
So, yeah.
But literally, best thing ever. Best Star Wars ever. Best show of the year.
They're not wrong.
Best writing.
They're not wrong.
I feel like they said about everything though about Star Wars. I feel like when a new Star Wars comes out, like especially show wise, everyone's telling me like, "Oh, this is
no.
Andor is different. I'll say
it is different. It is
Andor.
Different.
Like the first season of Andor, I will say this: Andor starts quite slow because I watched it like maybe 7-8 months after because I wasn't too impressed with the other shows that they came out with at the time.
Yeah.
Which shows are they?
What? I think it was season 3 of
Mandalorian.
Boba Fett, I didn't really enjoy.
Obi-Wan
was, again, okay.
Obi-Wan's only good for like the last fight, let's be real. Like that's literally what I'm saying. Yeah.
But Andor, people can get really hyperbolic about it, like in the sense of like, this has the best writing. And I don't think it's the best Star Wars show that has kind of like come out, because I prefer some of the animated ones more. But in terms of like if we're talking about live action, that was childish. I don't care.
Sorry.
No, you're good. But in terms of the live action, it is 100% the best thing out there. Like the way, because has anyone seen Star Wars Rogue One?
Mm-mm. Yes.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy?
Yes.
Yeah.
There you go, right? So if you enjoyed that...
Right, Tony Gilroy.
Yes, Tony Gilroy, writer and director. And the way they kind of like work backwards from it, because they retconned the story of getting... They retconned the story of how they get the Death Star plans in the first place. They took...
Could you explain what Death Stars are? Because that's...
Death Star.
Oh, the Death Star. So the Death Star in Star Wars was basically like this massive... How do you know?
Yeah, that's actually good. Loki, that's crazy.
Yeah, address it, it's fine.
Okay, wait, you've not seen Star Wars?
I have, but...
Okay, so you know, in the original trilogy, right? Yeah. The Death Star is just this massive space station that can destroy planets.
Okay.
You know, and that was basically like the...
I guess I wasn't watching.
Yeah, that was like the main thing. That was like the main thing.
With the one stupid flaw that it has.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the one... Yeah, people make jokes about it, but it's just this one tiny little thing that can destroy the whole, like...
It's one shot, boom.
Yeah.
Explodes.
But, so they retconned the story from like a different material that they pulled out from. And Rogue One was absolutely fantastic. They introduced the character Cassian Andor, who is the main character of Star Wars Andor. And it's kind of like his story of how he joins the rebellion and everything and kind of like leads up into the story of Rogue One, like straight into it.
But his character kind of goes from being someone that you would argue is a grey area character, not necessarily good or bad, too. Mm-hmm.
to becoming someone that's a leader of the rebellion, right?
Exactly, exactly that. And like seeing that journey, how he got there, especially with some of the supporting cast of how they got there as well.
Cast is
like that cast is like, just to kind of like list it off. Obviously, Diego Luna as the main character as Cassian. Then you got Denise Go as Deidre in the second season, and first season actually as well. Who I want to say. Which Asian girl?
Do you know the one in Rogue One that dies, and she's like a picture of her parents, and I was very confused as to why she had this.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
No, I'm not seeing her in the cast.
No. She's not in there. She's not in there. But you got Stellan Skarsgård in there as well. Andy yep. Serkis.
Yep.
Like it's a stacked cast.
Adria Arjona.
There you go as well. Like.
Put it away. Jason Momoa will come fight you.
Yeah, trust me.
You're not winning that.
But just on the second season, right? Because the first season was excellent, but the second season was so well done because it focuses on kind of like the ramping efforts of the Empire, who want to kind of like destroy a certain planet called Gorman. And the way Tony Gilroy manages to pull kind of like real life examples. So like what it felt like to me, the Gorman planet was very much of like, or the Gorman situation in general was very much of like World War II, like within the French resistance, kind of like when they occupied like Paris, I think at the time and whatnot, and like how they were able to almost juxtapose the Empire being literal space Nazis, which is what they were at the end of the day, like no doubt about it. And then like how they were able to mirror the French resistance within that, and then kind of like the intermingling stories of all the characters, where Cassian, like, he can see the people on Gorman where they're like, we're all on the same team, but we're also kind of not on the same team because we all have different goals. Like, we all want to be free from the Empire, but how we do it is different. Like, whereas the French resistance, they do, or the Gorman resistance, I should say, do a lot more protesting, trying to do peaceful protests, whereas Cassian is a lot more like, we actually have to be violent.
Yeah, we got to beef them,
and then kind of like seeing other ones. Forrest Whitaker as well. Is in there as well. By the way,
yeah.
Forrest Whitaker, I am so sorry. I should have you way higher as an actor. Like, I always thought he was fantastic, but he plays a character called Saul Guerrero, who is very much a radical kind of like rebel. Like, the people within the rebellion do not agree with his tactics because he's too extreme. But he gives out this one speech to a character which I thought was like, especially with everything that's going around the world, like this show feels so poignant, where certain characters have made speeches where, you know, like, well, I'm just going to say it outright, like, see what's happening, how a lot of people, especially within kind of like mainstream news media, are hesitant to call it a genocide, yeah. Right?
Call but a spade a spade.
To call a spade a spade, whereas in Star Wars Andor, right? So, not to spoil something, but something happens where one of the characters calls it a genocide, right? But the mainstream version of within Star Wars refused to call it that, and they're trying to spin the narrative in the sense of like, oh, this actually wasn't a genocide, this was justified resistance because, you know, these characters weren't doing as they're told. And then it's like they're trying to play into our faces almost, which very much mirrors what's happening kind of like right
now.
Real
world, yeah.
In the real world. And it's quite funny, I guess, in a way where it's just like, this show was obviously written, directed and filmed kind of like a year or two before everything has turned out the way it has. And since it's come out, like the fact that it's mirroring real world situations so well, and people watching it still missing the point, like, oh, I can see what I'm seeing on TV and what the Empire is doing as a genocide. Somehow I cannot correlate that to what I'm seeing in real time and whatnot. But again, like how they write it, the dialogue, the acting is so well. Because
do you think?
Go on. No.
And I know the answers to the question, so it's a leading question.
Go on.
Do you think you have to have watched all of Star Wars to enjoy Andor?
I don't think so. Like, I think all of Star Wars is a bit of a stretch. I would say, like, as long as you know the basics, like, as long as you are aware of what the Death Star is.
That's a very good one.
No, I'm joking, I'm joking.
Hold it, bro. Oh, awkward.
But no, as long as you know the basics, like, yeah, you just know of Star Wars, so to speak, like, Andor is something that, if anything, Andor is kind of like a good starting point, because it's almost like the origin of the rebellion. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you start watching episode or the original trilogy, like, the rebellion and some of the characters are already established, whereas in Andor you get an introduction almost to all of the big players that you then see in the major films afterwards.
I do think it's a mind fuck, though.
In what way?
The fact that the films in the 2000s are the first films. It's just jarring.
Yeah.
It's jarring to the eye.
That's the thing. I think
I can't, like, rather go from mediocre, because they have upgraded the visuals, but it's still not what an Andor would be. Vision.
No.
I'd just like to go from, oh, I can see this was in the 70s. This is in the 2000s. I can see, oh yeah. That's just a mini.
No. But I completely agree with you, because it's really weird when you do watch them in, like, chronological order.
4, 5, 6 is first, right?
Yeah. When it came out, like, 4, 5, 6 came out first.
It's the prequels, like, they are, aren't they?
Yeah, I guess.
Essentially,
like,
because
if we're talking about story wise, the prequels.
Two of the first three, yeah.
4, 5, 6, and then 7, 8, 9 with. I want to say not Daisy Ridley.
Yeah.
Is it Daisy Ridley?
Pretty sure.
It's not Ridley. It's Daisy something.
1 second, lads.
And then John Boyega. John Boyega. And obviously the white guy.
Yeah, Daisy Ridley.
Daisy Ridley. Yeah. Oh, okay, there you go. But and then, like, the films are its own thing, but, like, it's the things around Star Wars. Because the thing is, telling people to get into Star Wars is such a weird thing, because A, the fandom is the worst, and B, it's got...
Do you think it's actually the worst fandom? I'm doing something on work on this.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I've never... Like, I'm hesitant to call myself a Star Wars fan, because, like, the...
I mean, you can. It just doesn't mean you're a piece of shit.
But it's like, I guess it's one of those things where it's just like, you know, people's perception of what Star Wars fans are. Because it's like, you have a lot of good guys, obviously, but the majority of them are, like, just insanely racist. Which is I think, like,
do you think it's a majority, jokes aside?
I think so. I think the majority. I think, well, okay. Real life, obviously, a different story, but majority online, 100% racist. Because, like, there have been so many times, especially if we're talking about kind of like the prequel, for example, Jar Jar Binks, right? The character that a lot of Star Wars fans hated, but they hated him to the point where they sent out death threats to the character, to the actor who played the character, and it made him quit acting. And that's not the first instance that has happened.
This was in the early 2000s.
Yeah, early 2000s. And then there was the kid Anakin as well, had the same thing.
Hayden Christensen got hate as well for his
book. Hayden Christensen got hate as well for...
And more recently, we've seen it as well with...
John Boyega, Daisy Ridley, and then also the Asian girl who played Rose, which I do not know her name. Like, she quit acting as well. Then the Inquisitor lady from the Obi-Wan series.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there've been...
Wasn't there a recent Star Wars series that started a black woman?
Yeah, her.
What's the series?
I can't... Obi-Wan.
Okay. No, there was another one.
So the girl that played Rose was Kelly Marie Tran?
Kelly Marie Tran, like, and I remember, like, seeing this all in real time, because that was, I guess, more the recent cases. And I can see her online when she would tweet thousands of replies being like, I hate your character, go kill yourself. Like, and it's just...
That's mad, you know.
That's mad, just because you didn't like the character. And then it's gotten to such a point where, like, if you're a woman or a black person... Acolyte as well, as with... Anna, it's not Steinberg, is it?
Yeah, something Steinberg. We can get kids will get the information for
Yeah, she was getting hate. Granted, I did not like the Acolyte either, but it's one of the things where it's just like they'll take something that they don't like.
Amanda Steinberg,
that's the one. And it's weird because they hate it, right? But then years later, they would retroactively just be then like, oh, maybe it wasn't that bad. Because now... Yeah,
do you know what it is with me and Star Wars? It's such a stupid, like, thing, but the reason why I don't like it is I feel like after Revenge of the Sith, I feel like all the saber fights have been shit.
valid.
I don't understand. I'm like, that was like in the 2000s. How are we going backwards?
I don't care
who is a Jedi. Just make the saber fights lit. Make it lit.
Especially if we're talking about the films, 100%. What I will say is, within the series, especially season 2 of The Mandalorian, has one of the best lightsaber scenes I've seen, because there's a scene where Luke Skywalker comes in.
No, I've seen that fight, yeah. But there you go. My point is that even the Obi-Wan show, that fight's cool, but the saber actual fight is horrible. I'm like, bro, you two, a couple years ago, in that world, had one of the greatest things I've ever seen in my life. And now, this.
Yeah, that's the one thing that they have to work on. Like, I feel like with Star Wars, somehow, like, the best thing about Star Wars is things that don't focus on the Jedi and Sith anymore, whereas it's the everything around it. But then when they start being like, okay, cool, we need to throw a lightsaber in there or add a character who is one of those creeds, it's like, get an actual kind of, like, choreographer in. Like, you know, we don't just swing swords out here, but hey, it is what it is. But Andor, season 2, Andor in general, especially if you have some sort of interest in Star Wars, jump on it ASAP.
Fair enough, Mies. Back to you, Manny.
I'm going to go a bit left. Not even left. Because I haven't watched any films, but I've been to the theatre.
Oh, often. Yes. That's not even left. That's right at home.
Yeah, I've been left like in the genre of topics or media that we're talking about. So I'll quickly talk about the three theatre shows that I went to watch. Mm-hmm. The first one's called Baba Segi's, The Secret Lives of Baba Segi's Wives. It's a show based on an adaptation of a book that came out in 2010 about a character who is pursuing his fourth wife, and in during this pursuit we get an understanding of her character and also the other wives and also their and how they live in Lagos, Nigeria. I think this is based like in the late 90s, early 2000s, mm-hmm. but explores the autonomy or the lack of autonomy that women in Nigeria have, whether that be financial, romantically or sexually. They're not able to have that level of freedom that their male counterparts might have. They also explore stuff like abuse, patriarchy, so on and so forth. The show is actually really good, even though it touches on heavy themes.
What did you enjoy about it?
The characters, the acting was really good. The music was an important part of it. Mm. It just made it so much more joyful and enjoyment. There was music played throughout. There was dancing throughout. The main lead, or not, he's not the main lead, but he's the guy that plays Baba. I think he plays literally every single, like, he played like 5-6 different instruments throughout the show. It was just enjoyable. So it's something that was so easy to engage with. The character was just fun. It felt like a Nollywood film.
Okay.
A fun version. It was meant to end on the 17th of May. I think they have extended it. I can't remember until what day, but if you listen to this now, it might still be available to get tickets. It's in Hackney by Dalston. So if you...
How much are tickets?
How much I pay for mine? Like £15, I think it was. Oh, wow. Maybe less. I can't remember. But go check it out if you can. The next show that I watched was called Cable, which was... pretty much just all dance. It's the first time that I went to watch a production that was just completely dance. Mm. It was a reimagining of the story of Cain and Abel with two black leads, and they just wanted to showcase a show showcasing brotherhood and the issues that comes with like pressure of being like the eldest son and a bunch of other stuff. It was really enjoyable. Like, I enjoyed it a lot more than if you asked me to go to watch a dance show. Prior to that, I'm not sure if I would have enjoyed it, but I actually really, really liked it. I done it so well. There was a Q&A on the back of that, and it was interesting hearing the guys talk about how they feel about the arts and how they feel about storytelling, and storytelling within dance, something that I haven't necessarily ever engaged with before, but they've done a really good job with that. And there's a show that I got invited to, was in Peckham's, called Ifeanya? I might be saying it
wrong. See, I can't say English is failing you because...
It's not no English.
It's fine. Yeah, right.
It's even an Igbo word. I think it's an Igbo word for love, I believe.
Maybe you should have asked a friend of yours to help you out with the pronunciation.
The friend that you're thinking of is not Igbo.
Thing is, I knew that as well.
This is a show about two characters that are Nigerian. One was born here, the other person was born in Nigeria. One is Igbo, the other one is Yoruba. Obviously, people don't know, those are two different tribes within Nigeria that have different cultures, that have different experiences. Mm. And just looking at the, I guess, the difference between or the issues that might arise when two different cultures try to marry in London within the Western world, and also the problems, not even problems, like the experiences that you have as a child growing up in a different country, and how that experience might affect your relationships in the future. The reason, the way that the play came about is because the writer, his name is Tammy, I can't remember his surname, he done a monologue, a 2-minute monologue, on the back of hearing that able men don't get on their knees before they propose to the wife, to the fiance at that point. And he just found that interesting, and how it's also a culture divide. He made a monologue about that. It was a 2-minute one back in December. On the back of that, eventually made a whole theatre production through it. It was really enjoyable. The acting between the two characters was really good, especially the male lead. He was just, his comedic timing was spot on, and the way he was able to change his accent, because he was talking with the same accent that his uncle would be speaking in. He smoked it. Yeah, it was really enjoyable, man. Shout out to them. It was in Fair Peckham. It was only running for 3 days. Hopefully it comes back at some point with a bigger, better production. But yeah, that was really enjoyable.
Sick, man.
Hey,
yeah.
Dope.
Do you want to go? Okay. I can go. I guess I'll start with Forever. Mr. Yerner over here. The Yerner.
Guys wants to pretend that it's not deep
yeah,
down.
Yeah, I feel like deep
it's
down
not
you
softy
are.
As well.
Deep
down. Sign in there.
Deep down, you're a softy.
Because he loves it.
I think there was something that Bisola said, like, I think we're all, like, lovers here. And I think that's very correct.
I think you've got a complete incorrect misread.
Yeah, guy's definitely the least one of us. But he's got something in there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Maybe one day. Maybe.
There.
Who knows?
He's got something in there.
Maybe a few years ago. Who knows? Life, man.
Life. Okay.
Shout out to Jada Drake. Forever is a Netflix series which released not last week, but the Thursday May before. 8th. What's that song?
May 8th, I think it was.
Might have been, yeah. And it's a teen romance drama. There's not much to spoil about the series, as Manny mentioned sort of before. It follows two young teens, Keisha and Justin, who sort of reunite after knowing each other as kids. Their parents knew each other as well. Sort of distance, both athletes. Keisha is a track athlete, a runner. Justin is a aspiring basketball player.
Okay.
They meet at a party and teen romance. All this sort of like, somewhat relatable, cliche, cheesy teenage things that teenagers do where they love and they break up and they block each other and then they get back together. And then, you know, the first time you have sex with each other, the first time you text, you don't know whether to text, how to text, the first time of a phone call, all of those sort of like cliche teenage things that we probably haven't seen a representation of for young black teenagers is on display in the series.
I would say so.
The acting cast are great. Great chemistry, would you not say?
Yeah, I completely agree.
Wood Harris, for me,
smoked it.
Standout character.
He plays
Eric, who's Justin's father.
Okay.
And what the show,
I think I've seen a clip.
What the show does, I guess, really well is one, you get a juxtaposition of Keisha's background and upbringing, but she comes from a one parent household ish. Her daddy's involved in her life, but isn't present per se.
Yeah.
Whereas Justin's got both parents very much well off, living a good life. And you get to see the differences in his relationship with his parents compared to Keisha. I guess the lack of transparency that Keisha might have compared to Justin, where Justin's got Eric, who's Wood Harris, to speak to. And Wood Harris, it smokes this sort of like commanding, but yet understanding and open father role that you don't generally see depicted on screen.
Yeah. Okay.
Of black fathers, I think there's normally like a somewhat typical depiction of either absent fathers, which is a thing in real life, don't get me wrong, or someone who's very like a disciplinarian and very strict.
Yeah.
Like, whereas Eric manages to find like a nice blend between both. He's very commanding, but also gives Justin room to speak to him. There's a particular scene, Manny, I loved in episode 5 where they've gone away on the trip.
Mm.
You've seen this episode?
Yeah, I've seen it.
And Justin's, they're sitting together on the bench. I won't spoil it too much.
Yeah.
And Eric's going to tell him that Keisha's basically somehow ended up where they are on their trip. She's followed them. And Eric says, oh, I've got something to say to you, son. And he's like, oh, what, you and mum are breaking up? And he was like,
why would you say that?
Like, yeah. He's like, where'd you get that from? And Justin was like, oh, you, like, mum's a lot. And he just shut it down completely.
He's like, yeah, nah.
He's like, your mum, if we were to divorce, it's because she left me. And she's the best thing that's happened to me. And I basically wasn't tolerating his son speaking about his wife like that.
Okay.
Which I loved. Whereas Dawn, on the other hand, who's Justin's mum, very much sort of overwhelming, overbearing, but it all comes from a place of love.
Yeah.
Mm.
And her background as well, being like a high-flying financier in the world, and like her career background, I think, lends towards her high expectations of her son, mm-hmm. just wanting the best. And I love the duality of their relationship compared to like Keisha's with her mum, Shelley, who's loving in a sense, but also overwhelming in a sense as well, and a bit overbearing. It's a good series, man.
Okay.
It's just a good series. Like, without, there's not much to spoil. It's well cast, the music, the soundtrack.
One of the best.
How many episodes?
Eight, man.
Eight. Okay, yeah. Perfect.
Soundtrack is great.
Music wise, one of the best.
Some great life lessons, I think, for both young teens and parents.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the biggest thing for me about the series was the Christian thing. That's what I took from it. The Christian thing where, obviously, without spoiling it too much, something happens to Keisha, which completely has altered the course of her life.
Yeah.
And it sort of explores the ramifications of, what word would I use for this? It's the exploitation or the sharing of private videos, explicit videos.
They're all same age, brother. They're all kids.
They're all teens.
Okay.
But Christian, who's like her ex kind of thing,
yeah,
has like shared a video of her doing explicit actions.
Yeah.
Shared it around, and it's completely changed the course of her life. And that, for me, that was the most profound thing about the series, is like
how they handled it.
How she handled it, how the show handled it, the way in which it can completely change someone's life. In this instance, a young girl, but it can happen to anyone. It can happen to a young man, it can happen to a young woman. And how you have to be like, whilst Christian, I don't think, did it from a place of malice.
Yeah, he still did it.
He still did it. And it has huge ramifications on like her life, her family. They had to change her school and so on. Yeah, so that for me was like the most important thing I took from the series, alongside how good it was to see, I guess, a young teen romance. They were so jarring, though.
Yeah.
The characters are so fucking annoying. I think Manny might like them more than I did.
The character? No, I think Keisha's jarring. I think...
What didn't you like about Keisha? I stitched you up.
Nah.
Okay, go on.
No. She's,
Oh, you relatable?
You're not doing that, bro.
It could be to anything in life. It doesn't have to be...
She's very, like, flip-floppy in terms of, like... Brother, get your shit in order, and I get it. But the kids in it, so it's not that it's not that deep, in it. But in terms of like, she was not playing Justin about, but it's like you keep putting him
more so initially, right?
Yeah, just more so like the thing that I think so at the start, they're constantly blocking each other.
Yeah.
Jarring, man.
Yeah, very childish.
But it sounds like a very childish teen thing too.
One of the reasons why at the beginning, man, a spoiler, she blocks him because he doesn't reply. But there's a reason why he doesn't reply. Mm. And then when he sees her, it's like, why didn't she like allow me to explain? Essentially, like just lack of grace that she gave him. I think that was jarring. Justin does a few jarring things as well.
He is jarring.
I think like even like Justin's mom, she was really irritating to me throughout the show. She was very overwhelming. But then, like, one thing that I really like about the show is, like, it's very human. Mm. I feel like it's written very honestly in terms of, like, the type of characters writing. Because even though the mum was really annoying, you get moments of her just doing stuff. It's like, bro, I get why you act like this.
Yeah.
There's a scene where she calls somebody to have a conversation with them just to check if the other person's all right.
Great scene.
Probably one of my favourites. And just showcasing, like, obviously, she's not that she was showing a lack of humanity, but just showed like just how human and caring she actually is as a person, and the reason why she can be a bit overwhelmed with Justin is very understandable in the world that she grew up in.
Yeah.
We get this one scene, and one thing that I really liked about the show is that they didn't lean on black trauma. They definitely spoke about
a plus point.
Yeah, they definitely spoke about issues that, especially Justin, a young black man. A young black boy might face living in the area they lives in, and also coming from a place that has money, so he's driving around in a nice car. And when we get this scene, this is a bit of a spoiler, but it's not
huge.
It's not one where he's driving, and there's a police car right behind him. And I don't know how you felt watching the scene, but I felt really tense. And then you can feel it because Justin's got learning.
ADHD.
Is ADHD? Oh, yeah, he's got
speech impediment as well.
Yes, that's. And then you can hear him like struggling to breathe, as the police car is behind him, or he's breathing very regular, and then the car just drives past.
Okay.
And I like the fact that we didn't have to get him seen, a scene of him interacting with the police officers. I think that scene was enough to tell us, one, showcase that why his mom is like show so much concern for Justin. Two, to allow us to see that Justin does still live in this world. He does still have this feeling for any boy that looks like him within those areas. And I think that was just so well written, because you could have easily just lead into that scene and made it into a bigger thing than it needed to be. But that just highlights just how, I think, just well written the show is. Like, most of the characters irritate me in some way, shape or form, but just how humans are.
But I
like all of them. Like, I like all of the characters. They just can be really irritating at times. But yeah, great show.
No. And the series is based on a novel from the 70s or early 80s, one of the two. Which was banned in schools for how explicit it was in terms of the graphic nature of sort of young teens engaging in sex. Yeah, it was banned in schools and libraries in America. So it's an adaptation. Mara Brooker Kill is the showrunner.
Okay.
And yeah, she's done a really good job. Definitely worked. And it's very popular sort of among, I think. It's one of those blacks are going to run to it. Naturally so.
Same showrunner that did Girlfriends. She did some of The Game. She did, what else did she do recently? She's done it now. She has a long
list of stuff. Long catalogue.
Yeah.
Nah, it sounds dope.
Season 2 is on?
On its way, yeah.
On its way, okay. Nah. Well, I'm going to bring the pod real down.
Good.
In terms of quality. But on Friday, I watched The Weeknd's Hurry Up Tomorrow.
Oh, Kiss, get on the mic!
I have been summoned.
It is, for my money, in the decade, the worst film I've seen. I think in 2020.
Do you watch Mia Culpa?
Say again?
Mia Culpa by, okay.
I have no idea what that is.
Tyler Perry.
I make it a point to not watch anything.
Yeah, no, understand.
Yeah, I see his name, I run away.
Mia Culpa, is that the one?
Kelly Rowland.
Yeah, I think I've seen clips. I don't want to watch that shit.
Did you watch Madame Web?
That's barely horrible. I haven't seen Madame Web. Horrible.
I've not seen Madame Web, but I can guarantee you it is not worse than Hurry Up.
Okay, I can
almost guarantee you.
I've seen The Idol. Oh, I've seen one episode. So I already know going in that this was going to suck.
I already know. I've watched all, I don't know how many episodes there were. I think it's all 10 episodes.
No. They all didn't come out. They cancelled it, I think.
They cancelled the last two
episodes. Because they were like, no, watch this.
They had to rewrite it so that they finish on episode 10, right?
Yeah.
The Idol is one of the worst shows.
I don't even want to associate that with HBO. I don't think that...
It shouldn't be. We know
the only reason why HBO is kind of like involved is because The Weeknd is involved.
And,
keep that nigga out of films.
He cannot act. Keep that nigga out of Hollywood.
That's my thing. Keep that nigga out of Hollywood. He can't act. He can't write. He can't direct. Okay? These are the very three things that you might need. If you want to be in Hollywood. He can't do that. But just going back on Hurry Up Tomorrow, right? Hurry Up Tomorrow is in the most charitable way, a visual experience of Hurry Up Tomorrow, the album.
Yeah.
Right? In the most charitable way. If I'm going to be honest and see what is actually the film about, I don't know. It feels like a weekend fest. Which...
Do you know what? I felt the same thing about the idol. I just thought he wanted to be near Rose Lily Depp. That's what I thought.
He just wanted to be around bad bitches.
Exactly.
And it's just like...
That's
okay.
What I thought.
And that's fine if you want to do that, but like, you don't need to fucking act and force yourself to be in there.
Are you saying he loves bad bitches and he's got a fucking problem?
He does.
Hey,
that's a good one. That's a good one. But like, so just where do I go? Where do I go with this? Right? It doesn't make any sense. Okay, I'm just going to speak about like the actors for a second. Right? Jenna Ortega, I'm looking at you sideways because this is another project that you have put out or starred in that is not good. Death of Unicorn, sideways. Wednesday is okay, so I'll give her that.
Hasn't she got the ballads one? What's it called? Hunger Games.
Was she in Hunger Games?
Jenny Ortega's not in Hunger Games.
Is she not?
No,
I'm gonna check it right now.
Who's in Hunger Games then? The latest one. It is her.
Jenny Ortega? No, you're thinking of Zoe someone else?
No.
I have literally put up her IMDb. I am so dyslexic. Sorry.
I'm sure she's in Hunger Games.
So, yeah. So, Thank you. These are the films that she's been in, and I'm just gonna name off the ones that I don't think. Okay, I'll give her The Fallout. The Fallout is actually quite good, but Scream. Yeah. The Fallout?
No,
Fallout's good.
TV show.
Yeah. I didn't like it.
Wait, is that the TV show? Oh, where then I'm getting it mixed up then, because there was one about like a school shooting where she was in. I thought it was called The Fallout.
No, she's in.
There was a film where she plays.
No, she's not in Fallout. She's not in that.
No,
video
no,
game
no, no, no,
no, not you, Fallout.
Not the, not Fallout. Yeah, the Fallout. Fallout. It's completely Fallout. Different.
It's yeah, like the we're thinking of the other.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
Emily Purnell or yep. Ellie Purnell, I think her name is.
Oh yeah, yeah.
We're
yeah.
thinking of her. But anyway, Miller's Girl. Oh my God, Miller's Girl. Oh, she was in Miller's Girl.
That's another horrible.
Awful, awful film. Devil Unicorn. Hurry Up Tomorrow.
Scream.
Scream was okay.
No, Scream's the last Scream was good, man.
I haven't watched it, but she was in Beetlejuice.
That was alright.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's okay, but like the best thing that she has done is okay, guys. So let's.
But isn't that more of your problem?
I don't think it's more of my problem because it's a her problem.
Because For me, it sounds dumb. I look at her like a Twitter actress, where like she's bigged up on there a lot.
That's insane.
More than I see, like, oh, she has like so many dope projects like named her.
But okay, but I will say, like, granted, while I do hear you, I think she has got like a level of fandom and fame that people associate with kind of like top level actors.
No, she does not. That's,
I think that, no, 100%, 100%. What Jenna Ortega's name not necessarily brings people on. Into the cinemas per se, but like it is kind of like people are like, oh, Jenny Ortega.
I was thinking of Rachel Zegler, might be,
that's the one, Rachel Zegler. But
she was actually good in that, man.
Yeah,
anyway, so you Jenny Ortega looking sideways, Barry Keoghan,
that's someone I'm a bit disappointed
with. That one, he's a good actor,
yeah,
and he was good in Hurry Up Tomorrow. However, what he had to work with. Is like you actually set this man up for failure. So there was a particular scene in the film where he is talking to Abel, right? Abel doesn't want to do a performance because he's kind of like...
He's agent or something?
Yeah, he's his manager, right? And Abel's like crashing out, right? And then he's trying to calm him down and he like grabs him by the head, right? And he's like, your voice, man. Your voice is like an angel. You're not a normal human being. You're a fucking god. You're a fucking like.
So he writ that himself,
bro. I'm telling you, the weekend was just like, how do I work myself off, and just wrote like the entire dialogue, like,
sort of,
bro. I was just like, yo.
This YouTube.
Yeah, what did I say?
I literally sat there. Like, the film is about an hour and a half long, right? Wow. There's absolutely zero plot, right? So this is the plot of the film. The Weeknd breaks up with his girl, or with a girl, right? Which has this like traumatic effect on him, which causes him to not being able to sing anymore. Like, he loses his voice in the middle of a concert because he's so heartbroken about being broken up with, right? And Jenny Ortega's character is a super fan who they meet at a particular concert, and she kind of like breaks backstage. They meet each other and then he's like, do you want to get out of here? And then they get out and they have like a I don't know, they have a time, I guess. And then the next day, he's like trying to leave, being like, yo, I actually got a tour to do. And she's like, oh, I thought we were going to be together, blah, blah. And he goes, what? No. Like, you're just a fan. And then she knocks him out. And she knocks him out.
I seen a clip of him tied to a bed.
And
tied
him to a bed, right? And then she's kind of like being like, you have to be honest with yourself. Yeah. Like, honest being like, you have to confront your misogynistic views within your music and kind of like, your emptiness, your loneliness and stuff like that, right? And there was a particular scene which I thought, I know wasn't intended, but I thought it was such a great fourth wall break, because he's like tied to the bed, right? And she's like playing songs from his album, from Dawn FM, I think, right? And she's behaving like a super fan, right? She's like, oh, this song, Gasoline, from is actually about loneliness. It's such a great pop song, right? And then the song finishes and she goes, do you want to listen to another song? And The Weeknd is like, no, please no. And I thought it was a great fourth wall break, because I felt like I don't actually want to watch this film anymore. And I was The Weeknd. I'm being serious. I'm being serious, guys. Like, guys, let's be fucking for real. Like, I was, I thought it was so bad.
Like, that's the funniest thing ever said.
Like, it was, what are we talking about here?
I have to be honest, yeah. That set up.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I did not expect that.
That was next level, man.
I thought you were going to say about his music not being good or something, but that wow.
I didn't even want to laugh. That sound was incredible.
Yeah.
Like, but I'm being so serious because, like, he kept, like, he was, like, and that was probably his.
No, I didn't expect that, man. Where the fuck did that come from?
Give us a minute, bro.
I'll give you guys a minute. But, like, guys, this is a film where before I watched it, I read a.
What made you want to watch that shit?
Yeah, I'm a weekend fan. I'm not watching that.
Like, you went to the cinema? That.
I went to the cinema. I paid money. Sweet. I paid money to watch it. But this is the reason why I wanted to watch it. I knew it was going to be bad. But what made me watch it was a review from Discussing Films where they were like, this is a bad film. No doubt about it. However, if you are a fan, there are things that you can kind of like chew on in the sense of positivity. And this is where I will get to the positivity. He is a really good artist. Like, no, the weekend is like, because as I said, like, they play some live music of where he's performing, I want to say Wake Up, mm-hmm. Or Wake Me Up even, and it's like him performing it live, and he is such a fantastic vocalist. Like, he is kind of like one of the best in terms of singing, and it just reminded me of that, and I was just like, okay, I'm glad that God took all of the skill that should have gone into acting, into music.
Yeah.
But I
so he's all left foot, no right foot.
Yeah, he's all left foot, no right foot. And that is probably where I'll end it, because I could go on about this film forever, but this is something that where it's just like, if you want a bad film to watch, because it's like it's one of those bad films where it's just like, it's an enjoyable bad film, if that makes sense. Like, you love to hate on it. You leave the cinema thinking, wow, that was a bag of shit, but at least I enjoyed the ride, so to speak. But yeah, keep that nigga away from Hollywood. Keep Jenny Ortega. I don't know who her agent is. Please do better. Barry Keoghan. Is it Keoghan or Keoghan?
It's Keoghan.
Keoghan. Barry Keoghan. I know he must be friends with The Weeknd, which is the only reason why he took this role.
I mean, I already knew, but I'm just looking at his the films he's been in.
No, he's been in.
I'm thinking, why the hell did you even agree to
this,
that?
This must have been a favour. Must have been a favour.
Yeah, yeah. The only thing that I look at a bit sideways, which he probably wouldn't have looked at sideways when he accepted it, was Eternals. Because obviously he's thinking, Marvel.
Eternals is not a bad film, bro. I'm sorry.
Think that's a bad film.
Eternals is not a bad
film.
But
what I mean is, whether you think it's not a bad film, like, it's looked at as a bad film. You know what I'm trying to say?
People are stupid.
Yeah, man.
So my point being is that when I look at his discography, I'm like, that's the one I'm like, all right, cool.
Yeah, I hear it in Barry Keoghan. Like, I didn't enjoy Saltburn, but I'd be lying if I said that his performance in Saltburn wasn't good.
Exactly, yeah.
But yeah, that must have been a favor to a friend, yeah. Because why would you have that? Because that's definitely going to be the black mark on your thing. But yeah, not the idol. Hurry Up Tomorrow. I guess it lived up to his name, because I also wanted to be Tomorrow by the time I was watching it. But hey, that's it. One star.
Damn, dog.
Out of 10.
Damn.
Half star.
Half a star. That's a superstar.
Just want to throw it out there. Been rewatching The Bear, slowly but surely.
Jeez. Nice.
It's a fucking good show, man.
It is.
It's a good show. Yeah, it's a really good show. Like, there's a lot of setups. I didn't realize were setups. So it's just like, miss you. Looking forward to the 25th of June.
25th?
Yeah.
Damn.
So we've got, like, you lot have got, obviously you plan to, but we would probably do like a preview of season 4. Mm. You lot have got some time to do some deep dives. I don't think you actually have to rewatch the whole season. I think you can pick out some episodes and it's like.
No, I'm gonna rewatch.
After
I watch The Sopranos. In time for the
episode. Good luck, mate.
Yeah.
Your Friends and Neighbours. I've been banging on about this series for quite some time. I only started it 3 weeks ago. Maybe four, three.
What's it about?
It's an Apple TV series starring the man himself, John Hamm, Mad Men legend. And it follows a hedge fund manager. He basically loses his job, unfairly. Okay. Loses his job, kind of unfairly, somewhat questionable.
No, it's definitely unfairly.
Yeah.
definitely.
Yeah?
Unfairly.
Unfairly. Yeah. But, you know, he was set up. But so, yeah, it's unfair. Also, at the same time, kind of loses his family as well.
Oh, no.
Very unfairly. Very unfairly.
Let me go. How does he, like, not just him, like anyone in general in that situation, how do you not crash out?
Yeah.
So the film, Jaim's character, he's married, he's got two kids. Obviously, it showcased a reel of how they were at the beginning. Mm. They had to spend more money to get a new house and a new house and so on and so forth. Nice, all that stuff. He walks in to his wife getting raw dogged by, I don't even know if it was raw, but it must be. But one of his friends.
Bro, he's putting her through the mattress.
In the neighborhood.
He's putting her through the mattress.
Putting her through the basketball player as well.
Oh, no!
Chopping her up.
No!
And then he has to leave that house.
For them.
For them. Still paying for that house. Paying for another house. While he, I mean, your friend, that fucked your wife.
He's now moved in.
He's now moved in. And everything's fine. I can't lie. How can you be cordial with that? Impossible.
Okay. And you know what the worst thing about the series is? It does a really good thing where at first you feel so much sympathy for him.
No, I know he's done some shit. I know for a fact he's done shitty things.
For John Hamm's character.
Okay.
Cooper.
I only watched one episode. I know he's done shitty things.
We'll get there for sure. You feel sympathy for him, and rightly so.
This all happens in the first episode.
What he described is the first minute and a half.
Yeah. Right at the beginning.
Okay.
No, the beginning starts off with, like, I can say, because this literally is the beginning of him on the floor with a dead body next to him, and it's like blood around the dead body, then he's just cleaning up the body. That's the very first scene.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Shock the reader.
But as the series goes on, you start to see some of the flaws in his character, but the sympathy is still there. Because it's like, he's being made out to be the villain by everyone, by his wife, by his children. Like, there's some scenes where his children having a go at him. It's like your mum. Your mum was cheating on him. Like, and he's actually not crashed out to the point where you'd expect him to. He's been quite, as Manny said, cordial. And it's like the guy that was cheating with your mum is now living with you, and you haven't crashed out on him either. Like, he split apart your family, yet Cooper's the one that gets all the sort of flack. But they all live in this tight knit community.
Okay.
And they're all sort of from like the middle to upper class.
Big money.
All those social clubs,
that type
of thing, all in the same, but it's all kind of like bishy, which is kind of fun.
Bishiness
and snidiness and little shady comments.
Desperate Housewives type shit. Yeah.
Mm. Great balance between sort of comedy and drama. One of the first scenes is a conversation between John Hamm and another character. And I was locked in.
Liz, Olivia, something.
The dialogue, so sharp, and it's that maintains throughout the series. It's super well written dialogue wise, super sharp, brilliantly acted as well. John Hamm is in his bag here. The narration for the series as well.
Yeah.
Some of the narration, John Hamm is killing it. And it's not exposition dump narration. It's like giving you more information about his mindset, what he's going through, what he's doing in present moment times. It's like superb writing. Okay. I don't want to go as far as to say it's going to be, I think it might be in my top 10 of the year.
Okay.
Shows. Yeah. But I already have like a top 5 locked in my head. We're not even halfway through the year yet.
I
think this has been one of the best years for TV.
Back-to-back years, though, because last year was really good as well. Industry, we had The Penguin.
And I had this conversation with somebody last year, and I looked at like last year's top 5, and I compared it to what I would have right now. I think right now is better than last year.
That's because you're a Severance boy, though. And you're an Adolescence boy.
Oh, my God, Severance.
Yeah, but exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, sorry, carry on.
No, it's all good, man.
Fuck, Alex.
In the series as well, alongside John Hamm, you've got Amanda Peet. She's the wife of David Benioff, the Game of Thrones show creator.
Okay.
She plays his wife. She's really good. Yeah, she's really good.
The one that was getting put through the mattress.
I gathered.
I understand.
There is a lot of people
put through the mattress, literally. She was hanging through the mattress.
I'm not exaggerating. I'm with Manny. How he did not crash out is beyond me.
Brother.
Imagine coming home. Your basketball neighbor. Basketball player neighbor.
On top of your wife.
And the fact that he's not crashed out.
He's got a ring as well.
Lets me know that he's a piece of
NBA
shit.
NBA level.
He's got a ring.
He was like a three-time All-Star NBA or something.
Literally, yeah.
Yeah, and he's a hedge fund manager who lost his job.
Oh my God. The day could not get any worse.
Yeah, the narration's great. It's really well written. It's already got a second season coming. They already commissioned a second season before the first season came out.
Oh, okay. So just real quick. So what
is the show about? Just real quick.
It's a, so okay. I didn't even get there. Yeah, really. I don't want to spoil it though. But the premise is to maintain his lifestyle, he does certain actions to maintain his lifestyle that impact his neighbours.
Your friends and your neighbours.
I don't want to spoil it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, good.
He does certain things to sort of try and maintain that.
All right. Mm-hmm. All episodes already out?
No, there's like seven right now.
Apple TV.
Seventh came out on Friday. It's a fucking great series.
Bro. Okay, okay, okay. So it's a weekly thing?
Weekly drop. Yep. That's all Apple, right. man. Then you
that's, know what I'm saying? That's... Okay, something I can catch up on. Adding to my list, I'm going to go home. I'm going to get myself an Apple subscription. Bye-bye, Netflix.
No effects.
And...
So, are any of you watching The Studio?
This is what I'm...
That's our last one for the day, then. Go on. Yeah.
So yeah, we're watching The Studio on Apple TV.
Seth Rogen,
9 episodes out. The last episode will be coming out this coming Wednesday of this season. That's another show that's definitely in my top 5 so far of the year. I think Seth Rogen's done such a great job. So the premise of the show, it kicks off with Seth Rogen as a exec. I think it's like a VP or something along those lines.
Yeah,
studio exec. Mm-hmm. And his boss gets fired. And now he's in contention of becoming like the head of the studio. Him, one other character, and Bryan Cranston, the Walter White from Breaking Bad. He's the I guess what would his job be? He's like his boss's boss essentially. And then he offers the job to Seth Rogen. And then now we get throughout the season we get to see what an exec kind of goes through, meeting directors, actors, people that work within the industry. The second episode is called.
Is it the one show where it has like so many guest appearances?
Many guest appearances.
Like, okay.
It's satire. It's comedy. It's like the second episode is like it's called a one-off, and it's like the whole episode is shot in one shot. And then, but even like what I really enjoyed about him is like. Yeah, I like the guest appearance of the actors and directors, but even like the commentary on sometimes how people get things within Hollywood. Because they had, what's the name that's in Past Lives?
Greta Lee.
Greta Lee, thank you. Greta Lee is like, she's bare nice to the to Seth Rogen's character because obviously that's the head of the
studio. And he's a bit of a clown.
He's a bit of a clown.
That episode is fucking funny. You know when they chase him out at the end? Yeah, fucking brilliant.
He's a proper people's pleaser. But yeah, she's bare sucking up to him because she wants a private jet. But it's just like the whole... even with the director was... Who was directing that episode? Not that episode, but who was the director in that episode?
I'm not sure, you know.
Apologies. Director's name, but yeah, but even her, she's like trying to do everything to please my guy because she had to take this one shot, but she just didn't want to ruin the relationship that she has with him. It's an interesting look into how people in Hollywood interact with each other because of the different, I guess, standing.
And these are from his experiences for sure.
These are
like lived experiences or things that he would have seen.
And it's really fun. It's really funny. It's one of the best comedies, especially, I wouldn't say dark humor, but more satire that I've watched in recent years, especially live action. Seth Rogen, I think Seth Rogen is going to be an all-timer for me when it's all said and done. I think it's great.
I think so.
And like I think he picked...
Like the projects that he has.
Yeah, the project that he picks that he's involved in are really good. He's in Invincible as well. He's in something else that came out recently as well, like he was smoking it. But yeah, Seth Rogen is brilliant. And even the supporting cast and all the characters have. We've had Anthony Mackie, we had Martin Scorsese, we had Bryan Cranston, we've had Greta Lee, we've had, who else have we had?
Zoe? Charlize Theron, Steve Buscemi,
Steve Buscemi is in it.
Yeah.
Zoe Kravitz.
Catherine O'Hara is in there. She's in there. Oh, Catherine Hahn as well.
Yeah, Catherine and they're all played.
They're mainstays. But those two are mainstays. Catherine Hahn's Agatha.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But the majority of them are playing themselves.
They're playing themselves, yeah. Oh. And like the first episode is Martin Scorsese, right? The first.
Yeah.
Bro. Like when you watch the first episode, that's the ride that you're in for the rest of this.
Okay.
And it's so fun. They don't really. We even had Ice Cube in it. Yeah. And that episode is hilarious. That whole episode in terms of like.
I can give you the premise of that episode. It's like in terms of like the casting, the casting,
black casting basically.
The black casting saying like, oh, they looked at the board. It's like because it was a Kool-Aid film that they're making.
yeah, I see.
And like all the casting for the Kool-Aid are black, and then like the other family, the Kool-Aid were animation and had the live action family that was white. And they're standing over the board, and one of them, they were all like bare chin, like everything's done. And one of them standing over the board, it's like, I see a problem here. It's like, well, what do you see? It's like, what? Why are they all black? It's like, then the guys, like, no. Oh. But yeah, it's good comedy. It's good,
that's
good comedy.
Okay,
man.
Okay. No, that's jokes. Well, that's a wrap for today, man. That was a sharp episode. That was good fun. I like the catch up episodes, man.
Yeah, nah, for sure.
They're a nice staple within the PCS world that we do. We need to get to watching The Sopranos, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. We do, because we are doing that episode when?
Well, until you people watch it, I don't think we can.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I have the DVDs. I just need the DVD player.
We're gonna do a bear. We're gonna do.
that's actually what it is. The Blu-ray DVD player. Even
we're gonna do like a preview of the bear coming up for sure.
Oh, facts.
That's gonna be an
100%
for the month of June. Make sure that you follow us on the Post Credit Scene TikTok, Post Credit Scene Podcast. We're also on Instagram, Post Credit Scene. We're on YouTube every single week without fail. Make sure you like, comment. We really like the comments.
We do. Yeah, love. Even on Spotify, people can leave comments.
You can leave us on Spotify as well. Yes. And that's the Post Credit Scene Podcast. Over and out.
Boop-boop. Fantastic.
Hi, I'm Lashana Lynch, and you are listening to the Post Credit Scene Podcast.